Hi, everyone. Welcome to our review of Star Trek The Next Generation. My name is Lucas. I'm joined here by Alan and Namir. And today we're doing The Naked Now.
The Naked Now, written by J. Michael Bingham, a fake name for DC Fontana, and based on The Naked Time by John D.F. Black, directed by Paul Lynch. The Enterprise crew come to the aid of another budget-saving, original series, movie-era spaceship model, filled with drunken people suffering from hot flashes and deciding that the best way to cool themselves down is to blow themselves out into the cold vacuum of space, or seal themselves in a room and explode a barrel of Hollywood fake snow all over the walls and furniture and themselves. Not thinking it wise to wear any PPE, the away team brings back the disease quite easily, and one by one our heroes start acting like drunken stereotypes. In a sad display of poor judgment, supervision of engineering is given to a civilian teenager who manages to outsmart everyone on board and take control of vital ship systems. Picard tries to regain control of the ship before a nearby collapsing star throws off some chunks of itself that would give everyone on board a fatal sunburn. While the crew try to have drunken intercourse with each other, Dr. Crusher manages to concoct a cure despite being inebriated and horny herself. Meanwhile, the crew regain control of engineering and manage to narrowly escape being roasted by the star chunk thanks to Data's quick hands and Wesley's conveniently relevant to the plot science project. A quick closing joke about Yar not wanting it made public that she used Data as her personal sex toy. And we warp off to our next adventure.
this episode, while it's entertaining, it was kind of a misfire for a second episode.
My reaction was I liked the episode. I thought it was, like, I knew that there was it was kind of like a sequel to Naked Time, but I thought it was, I think what they were trying to do was make a kind of a, like a progression, like draw a straight line from this series to the original series, which they kind of already did in the premiere. And then having a throwback like that was kind of neat, right? Especially for people that didn't really watch the first series and we're starting new.
All I have is a vague memory of reading somewhere about someone taking a shower in his or her clothing.
Huh. The body Geordi discovered.
Well, I believe it may have happened before.
One man was taking a shower, fully clothed.
I feel like it was a sort of a big risk that they would invoke the original series, but not just in some form of subtle parallel storytelling, but really invoking the name of the original Enterprise and talking about James T. Kirk and referencing that other episode and the other crew going, well, they got through this and we'll just try to cut and paste their solution and see if that works.
The Constitution class Starship Enterprise, Captain James T. Kirk commanding.
Similar conditions,
which somehow resulted in complex strings of water molecules which acquired carbon from the body and acted on the brain like alcohol.
Yeah, in the original one, like it brought their insecurities to the surface. You got to know more about what makes these characters tick. And in this one, I didn't feel a whole lot of that they were drawing from inside themselves, any sort of deep-seated insecurities that would help define their character. It was just a lot of like, you know, high school acting. Here's my drunk stereotype, you know, staggering around. It almost felt like they were just going for, like, laughs, you know.
There was a young lady from Venus whose body was shaped like a...
Captain to security, come in!
The fact that we haven't got to know these people yet, and then they just jump into an episode that's going to make them change the way they behave before we even have a frame of reference to judge their differing behaviors based on this illness. It wasn't a really good idea this early in the run.
I really, really like this episode. It has its flaws, and its flaws are mostly kind of plot related. And I like it more than The Naked Time. Now, The Naked Time is obviously a better episode and it's better written. And in terms of the function of it to revealing the insecurities and the inner world of the characters, does a way better job. But this episode is way more fun.
You will address me as Captain.
You will address me as Chief Medical Officer or Doctor.
Like, I don't really know the context. Like, did Roddenberry write this? I skipped through the credits. I don't know who wrote this. Who wrote this?
DC Fontana wrote this episode, but was then subsequently rewritten by Roddenberry. And then so she took her name off of the credits as a protest.
Yeah, there's a pseudonym used in this episode.
So DC Fontana wrote the episode with this premise, right? That it was a sequel to Naked Time.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so what changed?
What Roddenberry put in was that there's a lot more sex.
Yeah, it was sexier than the original.
Oh, he put in the misogyny? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. When Geordi, he's on the other ship, and he walks into, like, a full-blown orgy, what that everybody's frozen, his reaction isn't like, whoa, what the hell's going on in here? His reaction is like, oh, it's cold.
There's a noise coming from that shower. Let me go check it out.
Imagine if Geordi just sees everybody naked through his visor, because he can just see thermally through their clothes. So if they, whether they have clothes on or not, he can't tell. So maybe that's why he wasn't reacting to this.
That's totally a good point. Yeah, it just looks like silhouettes.
Actually, I don't know if he'll see anything because there's no heat in there, so I don't know what he's seeing.
Were those mannequins or were those people like just pretending to be frozen? There are people pretending to be frozen, right?
I think so.
They sprayed him with Hollywood snow.
If that's the case, that lady that fell out of the shower did like an incredible job. Like, she does not move at all, but she falls full on sideways and her feet are spaced the same size, like apart when she falls down. That meant she had to like she must've been a yoga master or something. She had to keep that position that entire time she fell. I'm just saying, you know, unsung Star Trek heroes. I think for me, the biggest problem was the complete lack of any sort of pandemic preparedness, like at all. Like zero, like no PPE, no isolation, everyone touching each other. You know, they know that there's a virus, like a devastating virus, but Geordi's like left to roam around on his own. You know, he's not isolated in any way. And I couldn't let go of that. You know, for me, I was like, this is so silly. They just did it because it was convenient to the story. And for me, that's a really big problem. They kind of threw a lot of logic out the window just for the sake of making it entertaining, which, you know, it's fine. You know, like it's fun TV to watch, but it, you know, when you look at it too closely, there's nothing there, right? Like it's, when you peel back the layers, there's nothing in the middle of that onion.
You were right. Somebody blew out the hatch.
Why is there a hatch on the bridge of the Tsiolkovsky that they can blow out? Like, no other Starfleet ship has this hatch. Like, what scenario would you want to blow out?
You know, maybe the bridge got too hot.
Yeah, I guess that's what happened. But
crack a window open.
Take the helm, Mr. Crusher.
With this, I can pretend he's ordering me to take the Enterprise anywhere.
So there's a lot of hate for Wesley Crusher in the fandom, especially back in the day when the show was on the air. Because he was always conveniently saving the day. And so in this episode is sort of the beginning of that. There's two contrivances that allow him to save the day. One is they leave him in charge in engineering. And two, his science project basically saves the ship at the end of the episode.
Wesley may have given us a few seconds too.
Did he say Wesley, the boy?
He said Wesley.
They really did Will Wheaton and Wesley Crusher as a character a disservice, because I looked it up, he was like 15 when this show aired. So, you know, as a 15-year-old boy, I remember was like, you know, I know what's going through your head and how you are. And they wrote him like he was 8. Like, he reminds me of my daughter. You know, when he's got his little gizmo there, I was like, I recorded all Captain Picard's intercom voices so I can pretend he's giving me orders to run the ship. I'm like, that's what my 8-year-old does. Yeah. what 15-year-old boy is pretending to be taking orders from a robot voice of the captain? And
okay, but you could be stunting my emotional growth. You realize that?
Yeah, I wonder if he was originally supposed to be a younger.
He was supposed to be a girl originally.
He was originally supposed to be a girl, and then Roddenberry came in and was like, girls can't do that.
I think his name was Leslie Crusher originally. That was the girl.
I think you're right, yeah.
Really? Oh, boy.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Was that the captain ordering you to medical?
Which would leave no one here on duty. The chief was just summoned to the bridge.
What about me? I could call the chief on the bridge if anything happened.
Why they would let a 15-year-old again be in control of engineering, like I hope, I was it Shimoda? Is that his name? I hope he got court-martialed because he wasn't even affected yet. He was just poor judgment. I'm like, yeah, sure. I guess it doesn't matter. And there's like clearly other people walking in the background. Like there's no other engineering staff.
There were five other people in the room at the same time. It's like if you had an aircraft carrier in present day, and somehow you had a kid on that, and then somebody left the kids in charge of the engine room of the aircraft carrier.
And made that kid promise not to push that red button. Just don't do it. Okay. Just don't. All right.
And henceforth, a dessert course shall precede and follow every meal, including breakfast.
Hooray for the action, Captain!
And everyone's going to get dessert first now. Like,
and then all the adults are like, yeah. And they're like, you're an adult. You can have dessert whenever you want.
It's so embarrassing. You
know? Nobody cares. But it's the future. Like, doesn't every meal have the same nutritional value?
It's all reconstituted human waste.
That's true.
Yeah, that made no sense to me. But again, it was just a contrived... Man. Tries set up to get Wesley in the control room and uses science project to somehow make that one force field, and nobody apparently could get around it. There was apparently no access tubes or a window that they could phase through.
Oh, that is a copy of the Naked Time. Is that guy takes control of engineering? And
yeah, Riley takes over engineering.
The door. Yeah. What's the name of that guy?
Riley took over. He kept singing the drunken Irish song over the intercom.
Yeah. Oh, Charlene.
Please, not again.
I never made that connection, but that's totally what they were trying to do, the same thing. But it doesn't work because there's a window right there.
Yeah, like, I don't know why all these highly trained officers took so long to get past a kid's science project. She's just, like, in there waving her wand at these conduits for, like, 15 minutes. like just phase your way in there.
Effectively, by putting Wesley Crusher in engineering and sealing him off in there, he kind of becomes, in a weird kind of way, the antagonist of the episode.
Lieutenant Yar?
Honestly, like, with Data and Tasha, I kind of felt a little uncomfortable. I was like, is this harassment? What's going on? You know, like
who was harassing
you in
that one?
I don't know. Tasha and Dave, I have no idea. Because she's drunk. He's not, but he's taking advantage of her. But she's like, you know, I was just like, this feels wrong.
What felt wrong to me in that scene is the way it was written, where she says,
I learned how to stay alive, how to avoid the rape gangs.
That is a really strange segue to go from avoiding rape gangs to now take me into this room and have mad sex with me.
You know, where did that come from?
Yeah. That's the thing. That's the shoehorn, like, I'm supposed to talk about my backstory.
Do you know how old I was when I was abandoned? 5.
Alan, weren't you talking about recently about somebody on Discovery who just like...
It's on Discovery now with that they're trying to give all their bridge characters backstories, and they come in at the most awkward moments in the middle of crisis that they talk about, like, like the captain gives the security chief, you know, in charge of an evacuation mission. He's like, oh, it's like, I'm so happy you trust me with this responsibility because I was rescued from a hurricane as a child. I'm like, what? It was just totally awkward.
Are these the same bridge crew characters that you that nobody's ever cared about for the past 3 years?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
And there were other occasions for Tasha Yar to talk about her backstory in the episode. For example, when she was in Troy's, when she just breaks into Troy's quarters, yeah, starts dressing up all her clothes.
On the flip side, maybe she felt comfortable telling Data that because Data is not human. Like, oh, yeah, right? Like, it's basically like talking to a potted plant. Or in this case, like a vibrator.
You jewel, that's exactly what I hoped.
And that whole scene is just a setup for him, for a joke about him having a robot penis.
I resent that conversation made everybody imagine what that penis looks like. Like, instantly, you're like, oh, so pale.
Never flaccid, always ready to go.
It needs to be charged, though. That's the only thing. You just have to plug it into the wall.
And there's a variety of settings.
Data, I'm only going to tell you this just once. It never happened.
It becomes basically an iconic, famous scene that every Trekkie knows now.
But I think that Yar was special to Data, but I don't think Data was special to Tasha Yar, except for that for that one time, right? So I always thought she was special to him because, like, she was his first. You know what I mean? Like, right? Like, that to me has always been the implication. He was fully functional, but, you know, he never got a chance to turn anything on until Tasha Yar, right? That was always my impression.
At least you're functioning fully, Captain.
Can we stop talking about Data's penis?
Yeah, we're moving on.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Now, Doctor.
I believe I've become infected myself, Captain.
You know what the infection is?
It is definitely like alcohol intoxication. The same lack of good judgment. For example, right now, I find you extremely, extremely. Of course, we haven't time for that sort of thing.
What sort of thing?
It's interesting to me that all of the female characters, when they get drunk, they just want to have sex, right? Like, that's what it is, right? Like, it's very, you know, it's obviously like a 1960s Mad Men kind of way of looking at things. I didn't think that needed to be in there. It just kind of felt a little bit forced. I think they were trying to maybe make some sort of sexual tension between Data and Tasha. Didn't really go anywhere. It just felt kind of like shoehorned in there. Same with Troy and Riker. I never felt like that was actually, maybe not until later on, but I never felt like that was actually a real relationship. It always felt a little bit forced to me. And Crusher and Picard, right? It's the same thing. It's just a lot. It was a lot.
It's particularly what I love about the episode is the stuff between Crusher and Picard. Somehow that plays a little different than the other, like, flirtations. And
I think if you had one of those relationships kind of be in the episode, like Crusher and Picard, mm-hmm, right? Because I agree, I liked it. I thought it was fun. They played it off really well. You know, it was funny and it's cute, and it's great too because you think Picard is not infected, and then all of a sudden he is, and you're like, and it happens in a really hilarious moment. Right, he just
makes that really weird grunt.
Yeah, he makes that really strange noise, and you're like, "What? What was that? What happened?" but that to me was awesome, right? Because they're two people that obviously are attracted to one another, but they can't really, you know, act on it, right? Or they know that they shouldn't, right? But with Tasha, Data, and Riker and Troy, it's not the same dynamic, so it's not as interesting, right? I think that there were there were moments that were funny, but to me, the funniest moment. So my favorite character in the entire episode is McDougal, the engineer. I love. So I didn't notice this the first time I watched the episode a while ago, but I don't know if you guys did. But when Troy comes to get Riker for the first time in engineering, and Riker and McDougal are working on this thing, and Troy's like, I need some help. You know, Will, I think you should come over here. If you look in the background, McDougal, like, full on rolls her eyes. She's just like,
no, I noticed that.
And I watched it like 5 times just to make sure. And it's honestly is the best part of the whole episode, because it's in the background, it's subtle, but you're like, oh, the whole crew knows about these two, and they're like sick of it. You know, they're like, you guys need to figure this stuff out because it's affecting your workplace, you know.
Wouldn't you rather be alone with me in your mind?
That to me was like, oh, that's amazing. But that's not in the writing. I feel like she just kind of put it in there. But that's all character stuff. And I thought that was really a nice moment in that entire episode.
Just as an aside, the two things that I noticed in this episode in the engineering scenes, they didn't put out that table yet. You know, they have they had a table without the table there. It just looks like a lounge area. Now there's a little lounge area beside engineering. Troy calls Riker Bill in this episode.
Bill.
I think that's the only 2 times. I mean, it's here in Haven.
I just know him as Inzaghi.
Engage.
Another interesting thing is that there's a very short cross to solve at the end of the episode when the Enterprise goes off. Did you guys notice that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like they ran short for time and they need an extra shot, throw it in there. And he's like, we got an extra 5 seconds we got to fill.
Yeah. It shoots up, but then they cross dissolve it to it going super slow.
Yeah.
Right. And you're like, what happened? So I give it 3. I'll give it 3 starships because it was entertaining. I enjoyed it. There were moments where I really laughed. You know, I thought there were really some really great character moments, especially between Crusher and Picard and McDougal. I think McDougal was obviously the MVP of that episode. So yeah, 3 out of 5 starships. 3 out of 5 Tsiolkovskis.
Yeah, I'm probably in the same boat. I would give it 3 out of 5 starships. Because again, I was entertained by it. I laughed at the funny stuff, and I laughed at the inadvertently funny stuff. So I found a lot to love because there's a lot of cheesiness and I felt that the characters were and the actors were growing into their roles and having some fun with it. But yeah, I know a lot of the cast is embarrassed about that episode, but it played a lot better for me than it has in the past. Like, I expected to hate that, but it actually I enjoyed watching it again. So, but it's still kind of the middle of the road episode. So 3 out of 5. So.
I also give it 3 out of 5 starships. I'm surprised you, Alan, that you actually gave it such a high rating. But I actually really like this episode. I love the performances. I love these little moments and these moments that you never see ever again. You never see the crew having this much fun, and then you have these this really iconic, I don't know, I want to call it iconic, but famous, infamous scene between Tasha Yar and Data. And just on that alone, I feel that earns a little starship for the episode. And I think there are just these elements like we've talked about that don't come together, especially in terms of the logic of the plot and all the conveniences that kind of really get in the way of me thoroughly enjoying and getting, swept away by the drama of the episode. But those other moments really earn that extra starship and, 3 out of 5. I look forward to next week where we will talk about the very special, well-received and recognized episode of Star Trek Next Generation called Code of Honor.
Code of Honor. Interesting. Okay. I don't remember this one.
You haven't watched it in a while?
I haven't. I don't remember this one at all. Is this a good one?
Oh my God.
I feel like it's going to be stellar.
Be prepared to be offended.
Offended by how awesome it's going to be?
Thank you for listening. The Nerdiest Prime podcast is produced and edited by Lucas Cardona Morissette. Our technical director is Namir Ahmed. Summaries are written by Alan O'Neill. You can find us at foreverstartrek.com.